Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Fremantle Press podcast. Today we're here with Alex Duke, who is one of 10 authors longlisted for the Fogarty Literary Award. And he's in the running for a $20,000 cash prize plus a publishing contract with Fremantle Press. Alex works in digital marketing and he says his precious time outside the office is spent on writing, cooking and tending to a needy ginger cat named Rufus. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, should all authors have a cat by their side when they're writing a manuscript?
It depends on the cat, probably. Some cats are probably more of a hindrance because they, my one certainly, can attack at random any exposed flesh or anything. So, I don't know, it's hard to say whether it's a hindrance or whether it kind of keeps you motivated in some kind of weird way to keep, you know, pushing through to get that word limit. But I don't know. It's hard to... I've always had one by my side, so maybe I should try writing without one.
Or with a dog.
Or with a dog, yeah. Or maybe, a budgie or something.
Ferret. I don't know. A rat. Write crime. Maybe it should be a rat.
True. Actually, a ferret might be... This is very off topic, but... You know, like, so a dog barks, a cat meows, a ferret dukes.
There you go.
It's my namesake. Maybe I should have a ferret.
That's right. Now, your biography is about half the size of every other writer that sent me a biography. You're a bit of a mystery man. So have you had any support from fellow writers or have you been working with writers' centres? Who's been helping you out as you write this?
I haven't worked with any writers' centres. I think I have probably cobbled together some support from various people around the world through different writing forums and stuff like that. I know a few people who have been involved with Fremantle Press in the past, by coincidence, really. I am annoying sometimes and track down authors online and just email them questions. And sometimes they respond, which is really nice. I've basically been trying to get the support from anyone who'll give it to me when writing this. Mm.
So let's talk about your manuscript.
Sure.
No Answer. What is it about?
So it is a crime thriller about a guy called Jake Hoffman is his name. So he's essentially just a completely normal guy, and his life changes in an instant when he receives a panicked voicemail from his estranged sister begging for his help before she goes on the run. So his sister's name is Agatha. So for Jake to find Agatha, he must not only navigate a seedy underworld with crooked cops, business people, and government officers, but he must come to terms with his own failure as a brother over the years. If you can't tell, I was reading that off a piece of paper because I wrote it down earlier.
So how did, take us back to the beginning. How did you actually start writing the manuscript?
I'll put the paper down. So the original, I thought of the kernel of it probably about 5 years ago, I think. And I originally thought of it as a short story. And the genesis was really... I've come to really like stories that are very simple, I guess, or have a very, very simple conceit and then kind of branch off into, everything gets more complicated from there. And so it honestly just came as an idea of what if you got a phone call that you just really didn't want to get. And then I'd ask myself, well, who's the phone call from? Does he even get the phone call? What does the voicemail say? And so it originally started as a short story, which really kind of was more of an end of a chapter one, I guess, because I don't think I've ever written a short story that works because they all never end. They all essentially are chapter ones. So I wrote that probably about 5 years ago and then... kind of forgot about it, had it in the back of my head since then. I think in the time between then and when I started working on No Answer, I wrote a lot of different sorts of things. Okay, wrote sort of like science fiction and sort of Hitchcockian globe-trotting thrillers, which are, really good fun. But probably not really me and my voice. And so then I remembered, I was like, oh, what about that? The thing about the voicemail that I wrote ages ago. So I just picked up the short story, read it, and then went from there. And it turned out to be the good chapter one, I guess, because that led to a book.
And how long did that actual, once you'd picked up the short story and went, well, this is going to be the one I'm working on, the manuscript I'm working on, how long did that take you from the first chapter to writing the rest of it?
Probably about 10 to 12 months, I would say. I have a full-time job, as many writers do. About 10 to 12 months of writing it around my full-time digital marketing job.
And are you able to work from home? How do you fit it all in with your job?
I think I'm good at breaking down writing the book is the big goal. I'm not very good, but I can break it down into like 1,000 little goals. And so that's simply like today I'm going to write like 1,000 words, or aim to write 1,000 words. Because I think a couple of years ago, maybe when I was struggling more with tackling something as big as a whole manuscript, I just realized like it's really just like an accumulation of words. And if you write 1,000 words a day, then you've got 90,000 words in 3 months. And that's really not that long if you kind of stick to it every day. And so, yeah, it really, really adds up.
Well, you have stuck to it, and now you are in the running for the Fogarty Literary Award. How does that feel?
I have been in a state of constant anxiety, which is rare for me. It's amazing. I didn't think I'd be counted among the best kind of young writers in the state, and by Fremantle Press, who's a publisher that I, you know, just have adored for so long. And I also must say thanks to the Fogarty Foundation for this. It's just such an amazing opportunity, and it's good because I've noticed over the past few years there's been, over in Victoria, like the Victorian Premier's Unpublished Manuscript Award is, you know, just launched like year after year. It's launching these like superstar writers. And so to have something like that in WA, and even then again for younger writers or for 18 to 35 writers, this is such a phenomenal opportunity. And it feels good.
And well done.
Thank
Congratulations.
You.
And we're now going to ask you to pick up that piece of paper, because we'd like to have an extract read to us from No Answer. So go ahead when you're ready.
Right. So I should give it just a little bit of context, because it's not from the, it doesn't start at word one on page one. So as I said in the little very brief synopsis, No Answer's about Jake. He gets a voicemail from his sister. His sister is begging for help. Now, his sister's been estranged for a couple of years from him. She's had some trouble with the police. She's currently on parole. So while Jake knows that he needs to help her, he is a little bit wary about calling the cops around, because he doesn't know what the cops will find at the house that she's at, and so that could just make matters worse. So he decides to check it out him first before involving the police. Oh, and one other thing I do need to mention, at the end of the voicemail there is a dull thud that he hears, and he doesn't know what that is. Okay, so here we go. Our apartment is perched on a street that runs alongside a huge war memorial park. The central obelisk of the monument reaches high into the sky and can be seen for kilometres. The grass surrounding it is always the same colour green, every blade cut the exact same height. In the afternoon, with the sun sitting just above the ocean horizon and the port city, the place looks like some kind of movie set. Right now, though, the sun is high enough that everything looks washed out and overexposed. I gun the Barina and hit South Terrace, heading towards the estate. I don't remember the street address, but I know the way like a homing pigeon. It's on a big block, set way back from the road, and piled with enough dead wood and kindling that the place would go up into flames at any moment. Coming through Coogee, barely keeping under the speed limit, I pass by a park where Ag and I used to play on the swings. Back and forth, back and forth. Mum would push us both, high as we could go. When Mum was gone, later on, Ag had her first cigarette in that park. I gave it to her. Focus on the road. Focus on Ag now. 20 minutes later, I pull up outside the estate. It's surrounded by a moat of overgrown, dead grass. A rusted red tricycle upended to one side. For a moment, I wonder if there's a kid living there, but it's probably just a relic from some wild party when someone thought it would be funny to ride around their little brother's Christmas present. I get out of the car. The place is a reconstruction, a sculpture. Once upon a time, it was the fucking height of decadence. Uni parties so wild you'd hack years of your lifespan. It's isolated enough that no one would complain, that no one would care. The only thing nearby is one of the country's most polluting industrial areas. Now, though, this place is a ruin, an ancient and crumbling temple left in the middle of a field. Or maybe it's just me that's changed. There's another house across the street. I'm not sure if it has always been there. It must have been. The faded curtains swish ever so briefly back and forth, the only sign of life in the whole sorry building, except for the immaculate roses out front. Once more I try Ag's phone. Once more, nothing. I glance down at the back of my hand where the Cheshire Cat tattoo used to be until recently. A winking smiley face, blasted off by lasers at the cost of several $1,000. At the time, the tattoo seemed like a big protest against the world. Later, it just seemed sad. There's another 10 seconds before I manage to take a step forward. The dry grass and leaves crunch underneath my polished shoes, and for a moment I feel like a door-to-door salesman. The door itself looks fine. No sign it has been kicked in. I try the bell. Nothing. Just magpies in the distance. Figuring the bell doesn't work, I go around the side, passing a low chicken wire fence that could only stop the laziest poultry. But the house neat and abolished. There is nothing surrounding the place anyway. Just bushland. Outback is like the front, only with more rusted metal. Adult-sized bikes, barbecues with puddles of solid opaque grease, a totem tennis pole bent out of shape. Then the smell hits me. I gasp and cough. Just a few meters away is a dead roo, its side peppers with fly-blown bullet holes. Scattered around the ground is a handful of bullet casings. Whoever shot it didn't have any grand plans about making a stew. They were just having a bit of sick fun. I turn to go in through the back of the house, but I stop in my tracks. Fuck, I say out loud. Centered right in the middle of the grimy sliding door is a handful of cracks radiating outwards from a jagged hole. All of a sudden, the thud on the message makes a shitload more sense. The whole reason for Ag begging for help. That thud was a gunshot, and I am looking at a bullet hole.
I'm a huge fan of crime fiction, so I'm really looking forward to getting my teeth into this when it's finished and ready for publication. Alex Duke, thank you for reading from No Answer. Alex is one of 10 authors longlisted for the Fogarty Literary Award, and he's in the running to win a $20,000 cash prize and a publishing contract with Fremantle Press. If you want to find out who wins, join us on Wednesday the 22nd of May for the announcement, which will take place at the ECU's Beagle Tent. Tickets are free and available from fremantlepress.com.au.